Welcome to the AI. Spreading the podcast for Lucy and Anne. Well, hello and welcome. You are listening to the AI Readiness Podcast with your hosts. I am Lucy.
That is she. I am Andrew. Not forgetting Rich, who's here to keep us on track.
Hello, everybody.
Hey, Rich, and so your role is to use the banana word when we do a certain thing. Would you mind reminding us, please?
Yes, it's our code word for when you go too far with AI technology, something that we might not understand. So I'm just here to keep you in line. I didn't have to use it the last episode, which is probably a good thing.
Right, let's just do a little quick test. Prompt engineering.
Bananas.
Okay, work stack.
Double bananas.
Okay, right, we got a measure of it, Lucy, I think. So this is our second podcast. We got rave reviews about the first one, so we thought, well, we might as well get stuck in. Honestly, it's been the highlight of my week last week recording the first one, so I just can't wait to get stuck into this.
It was so much fun, and it's all I want to do. So, Sals.
But the measure of a good podcast is, like, you know, if you ever get the sense that the hosts are having more fun recording it than you're getting as the listener, then we've got a problem. So our mission with this podcast is to make it entertaining and relevant. We'll get to that very shortly.
Yeah, and I think for me it's really important that we help listeners, whether you are in a HR team, whether you're in an IT team as well. I welcome you to listen into the conversations that we're experiencing, but this is all about helping you start with your AI journey and the challenges that people are facing with AI adoption. I want us to be considering use cases to inspire people, but practical, you know, real world applications that mean something to solve problems. We can talk about the conversations that we're having out in the market, and generally learning from people that are doing it, so that, as I mentioned last week, if there is that light bulb moment, then we're doing our job well for others to take something away and put into practice.
That's fair enough. So I talk to, you know, we talk to a lot of clients, a lot of people in general. And, you know, one of my more recent CEO conversations seems quite relevant in why we're doing this. You know, actually a friend of mine called Andy, and he was saying, yeah, I know AI is there, but it's kind of over there. And it's like this gushing torrent of information, and there's so much about it. And I don't really know which bit I should sort of dip my cup into and drink from, you know, where do I start? We're here to answer that question for you. That's the whole purpose of this podcast, is if you're in a people team, if you're in a learning team, or if you're in a leadership team, this is helping you to basically get going from the bottom up or from the top down.
And to encourage the conversations, like you just said, something's happening over there. So often I hear, oh, I think there's an AI team doing something, but we haven't heard anything.
Yeah, yeah. How much do we hear that, right? There's an AI working group somewhere, and I'm waiting for their output. How long have you been waiting? About a year, yeah. Let's get into breaking news.
Yeah, what on earth has been happening this week?
So one of the things that we're excited about is the new search, web search and chat search functions in ChatGPT.
Yeah, that's popped up on the bottom of the chat.
It did, yeah. It just kind of like popped up one day. So ChatGPT, we are tool agnostic, Lucy, is that fair to say?
We have to say that. It's very fair. It's more than fair.
But we recognize other tools are available. ChatGPT always seems to be that a couple of steps ahead. And they put in, so one of the things that's been a real pain in the backside for quite a while is you have this brilliant chat with GPT, and you have five more chats, and then you can't find the original conversation because there's no search function. Or, you know, you could cheat by going to your iPhone where that was actually true, find the chat, bring it back to life, and then there's so much mucking about. But now you can just use the little search function and actually just find your previous chats. Like, it's a game changer, and it's only taken 18 months to put it in there.
So, I mean, yes, number one, that is really useful because I've got reams of old chats. But two, sorry, I thought you were talking about the web search when you started this. So that's something else.
Well, yeah, both actually. Yeah. So the searchy thing brilliant, well done. That's like almost like a hygiene factor. Thanks for just sort of taking that friction out of finding things. The web search, how are you getting on with it? Have you tried it?
I have tried it, and I've got I'm undecided. So good in that it's performing a bit more like Google now, and that it will bring up relevant content that's also, you could arguably say, more up to date. However, when I brought in the web search to support producing a document, it wasn't very good. So I actually preferred, because I used it for research, thinking, okay, well, it's going to be web-based, so it's going to search for particular things that I was asking it for accurately. But no, I still found myself using perplexity.ai for the research element and then coming back to ChatGPT to craft the output. So undecided, but I do see the potential.
Yeah, that makes sense. So if you haven't used perplexity.ai, it's a bit like you can just jump onto it on a browser and use it like Google, right? And so you can do it, performs web search. So it's almost like ChatGPT is a large language model, this super intelligent thing that creates amazing loads of different outputs. But Perplexity is more like a web search engine that's got a large language model on top of it. So it finds you a lot of things, pulls them all together, and just gives you a kind of cohesive summary. And I would say I'm in the same ballpark as you. That's still my go-to. I kind of trust Perplexity more, even though ChatGPT is now behaving like that. So it'll find you web search content. It's still a bit clunky and a bit hard, but I imagine they'll refine it.
Yeah, and also Perplexity, you can direct the knowledge base you want it to use. So for research, I really do feel safe when I'm asking it just to look through academic information so that I know that it's quality. But interesting what it means in terms of in ChatGPT, or what it will mean in the future, because I'm kind of thinking, so if I'm using it to plan a trip, and I'm then using the web element to find stopping points, restaurants, hotels along the way for that trip, so it's enhanced there, will there be a time when it'll then book it for us?
Is my That'd be super cool, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
That'd be super cool. And then the other thing in the breaking news segment is voice on ChatGPT. And this isn't really breaking news, but we keep showing it to people and go, I had no idea it could do that. So we're calling it breaking news.
Yeah. And also we did mention it on the last episode, and it's something that I want to share because first and foremost, using ChatGPT and the voice function versus typing in was an absolute game changer for me in terms of being able to communicate and collaborate with the model versus typing, because we're too structured when typing, and we're, you know, we please and thank you, which is really super cute but not necessary.
Yeah, I mean, as a psychologist, I'm kind of obsessed with the fine detail of the human experience of that, and so I recognize that when you're typing, you have to sort of think at the same pace that you're typing. But if you're speaking, you think a bit faster, you can actually just dump loads more instructions and feedback into the model in a more kind of humanistic way. And because of the way tools like ChatGPT work, they're actually good at understanding real language, right? So, you know, that's sort of part of the sort of fundamental prompting process that we share with participants in our immersion courses is, you know, start talking to the model, because it's much closer to delegating to a potential colleague, a synthetic colleague nonetheless, but it's just more effective. So this is a real, real good thing.
Your voice, your tone, to help you then craft, you know, the words that you use and the way in which you speak to craft your output a little bit more, you know, more authentically. I know there's more to the voice function, but I guess I want to encourage people, have a go. If you've got the microphone setting, what is it to get it working on your keyboard?
To actually speak into the model? On a PC, you use Windows H in order.
So that allows you then to use the voice function, or of course on your mobile phone, it comes up more easily. But yeah, just encourage people to have a go that way and to talk as you would normally, as if you were delegating to your colleague in terms of telling them what you are looking to achieve. So,
should we do a little demo of the actual, you know, ChatGPT talking? Because the new voice is pretty cool as well. Yeah, right. Yeah. So What's the demo you want to hear, Lucy? Like, what would light you up?
Let's put it into context. Let's use it to help us with difficult conversations, perhaps like a coaching element.
So, hey, ChatGPT voice, teach me something about difficult conversations.
Absolutely. Navigating difficult conversations is an essential skill. The key is to approach them with empathy, clarity, and a focus on mutual understanding.
Look, could you do me a favour? Could you speak a bit faster and chuckle at the end of each sentence? I'd really appreciate that.
Sure thing. I'll speed up and add a chuckle at the end of each sentence for you. When having a difficult conversation, it's helpful to set a positive tone from the start. Yeah? Also, be direct but respectful, which helps to keep the conversation constructive. Right? Lastly,
it's like an ironic coach.
Got it.
Anything else you want to see? Let's have a look. Let's do some proper executive coaching. So bin off the chuckle, and I want you to be a world-class executive coach. Take me through a problem right now.
Absolutely. Let's dive into a coaching session. What's a challenge you're currently facing that you'd like to explore?
I'm in the middle of a live podcast recording, so I don't really know. Like, maybe how to introduce the next segment.
All right. Since you're recording a podcast, let's make the transition smooth and engaging. Consider saying something like, "That was a fascinating discussion on previous topic. Now, let's delve into next segment, where we'll explore, briefly describe the next topic."
Brilliant. Okay, so we've been looking at this from a skills perspective, Lucy, but like, you can really muck around with it, right? So, Rich, you know, pay attention, because it'd be good to get your take as a civilian, you know, after this little session. Okay, ChatGPT, could you please be a irreverent ventriloquist dummy for me, please? And choose a character, like maybe an Italian waiter or something.
Sure thing. In an over-the-top Italian accent. Ah, my friends, you see, when you cook up a good conversation, you gotta add a little spice, eh? Keep the audience on the eyes.
What I want to kind of talk about is the different ways in which you could use the likes of ChatGPT. Am I right in saying that Copilot also has the voice function?
It has a voice, but it's not quite as flexible or nuanced. Like, you know, this will speed up, slow down, talk in different languages. It's just super flexible. But the Copilot one is a bit more rustic and pedestrian. I can't believe I'm saying that. I'm sound like an ungrateful teenager, but, you know, it is not as good.
So we've looked at using the generative AI tool of choice to communicate with and ask questions and through the voice function. You've just demonstrated how you could use the tool to act as your coach by asking for help. And its new voice function in ChatGPT anyway is really quite amazing in terms of different voices, the potential there for different languages, different speeds, making it funny. But also, is there the opportunity to use these tools to be able to communicate with documents? And the reason why I'm asking that is because I saw a news article this week that the government website gov.uk is currently trialing a chat bot. So obviously they're building this bespoke, so it's not off the shelf kind of ChatGPT, but the principle is the same. The point is, this bot allows business owners and users of their website to talk to the bot to get information out of the website, to save them having to search through potentially various different complicated and busy web pages. And I just thought, you know, that's a really great example. How else could organizations use the voice function to be able to disseminate information in a really easy way?
Absolutely. So, yeah, I'm with you. Like, the voice function's got loads of use cases. You know, you can practice high stakes conversation, but zooming into what you just said, and that's why I was looking down, I was just getting this ready. As an example, you can upload a document and just have a chat with it. So this is one of mine. Let's have a little chat with it. So this is the app into which I've uploaded the BMW 3 Series product manual from like 5 years ago, because I just randomly grabbed a PDF off the internet to test it. So let's test it. Hey, could you tell me, does the 320i have a reversing camera?
Yes, the BMW 320i comes with a reversing camera as part of its standard equipment.
Great. Are there any models that don't have a reversing camera?
Yes, some models of the BMW 3 Series, such as the SE and Sport variants, do not list a reversing camera as part of their standard equipment. It is more common in higher trims.
So the use cases are, you know, like you've got a sales team, or, you know, you want to, you know, an employee handbook, you know, just as you say always, Lucy, like discard the detail, keep the inspiration. Like, yeah. What document would you like to upload to make it easier to consume for people? And that functionality has been there for quite a while, but I don't see it used as much as it could be. And that's in ChatGPT and other models are available as well.
Yeah. I'd be interested to know if Rich uses the voice function. What did you just think of that, Rich?
I thought it was amazing. I was laughing really hard at the chuckle at the end. It's like a kind of a, what do we say, like a school coach or something, right? And there's lots of potential. I didn't know that you could throw a manual in there as well, you know, throw some instructions in there and find out the best way to do it in layman's terms.
What you could do, Rich, is like, you know, let's say you've got an RC505 loop station, you know, because you look like the kind of guy who's got one of those. And then you've got like a amazing mixing desk. You know, you could actually upload both manuals and then have a chat with it about how you connect them and use them together. So the complexity is there. It's quite amazing.
People that don't necessarily go through manuals, you know, like there, some people just aren't, they're not wired that way. I was thinking as well, are there any red flag AI words that just come to mind? Is there anything you look at on the web nowadays and you say, oh, that's definitely AI?
What's your favorite, Lucy?
Trailblazers.
Yeah. And mine would be, at the start of a LinkedIn article, it would be, in the fast-moving world of business, you know, and at the end, it would be the cheesy call to actions. So let's all band together and, you know, buy whatever, diesel, or, you know, whatever the call to action is. It's always really cheesy. And the emojis, loads of emojis, rocket emojis. Yeah. So, like, keep the questions coming. And also, dear listener, if you have any questions you want to put to us, just give us a shout. We'll share our contact details at the end, and we will endeavour to answer your questions. Conversations in the field. We love being in the field, don't we, Lucy?
Love being in the field. So what have you heard about? What have you been talking about this week?
So this is basically about our sort of conversations with real human beings about AI adoption. And we had a fascinating conversation yesterday it was a bit of a coaching conversation with a couple of people from a smaller organization. And what fascinated me was thinking about neurodiversity and the way that people relate to the tools. So I'm an ADHDer, and so what you'll see from me is relentless hyper-focus. So if you say to me, can you build a bot that does X, Y, Z? I'll be there at midnight going, I'm still there, Lucy. I'm still trying it. I'm still, you know, because I just love it so much. But I sort of met my opposite counterpart yesterday in a client conversation and the story was quite a familiar one to me. And, you know, I've learned not to go, oh, don't be silly, but just to kind of be a bit more embracing of people's mindsets. Because this person said, well, I had a look at ChatGPT-3, and I didn't really like it because I asked it a question and it didn't give me an authentic answer. I think it was something to like, you know, who's the prime minister? And it gave an out-of-date answer. This is when ChatGPT first came out. And then, you know, her response to the model was, and therefore I don't trust it. And that response is quite permanent, you know. So what we know is that frameworks and models and tools like Claude and Perplexity and ChatGPT, they're evolving all the time. You know, so if you sort of decide it's biased, and it, you know, if I ask it for pictures of a bunch of people, it'll give me a load of white people. Next week, it might not do the same. And so, what I noticed was that it's quite a natural reaction to go, here's a thing, it's done this. This is my judgment about it, and that judgment is permanent. And so, our mission in that conversation was to try and demonstrate and sort of work her around to the point of view of like keeping an open mind.
And that makes me think about organisations that are just handing out tools. There's Copilot, go. And if people don't use it correctly, don't understand it properly, and it doesn't perform in the way that they thought, hoped, or it should, immediately you're not going to trust it, as you said, and therefore not use it. So that's a massive potential barrier to adoption. And that's
it is.
So organizations need to be aware of.
Absolutely. So, you know, like just go to continue your strategic riff. So, you know, therefore, you need a sort of like a there. Those people exist in your organization, right, as well as the sort of early adopters. And so what's your plan to include those people, not just from a cultural kind of inclusion perspective, but a kind of ongoing maintenance and sort of communication and capability sort of program. And it's not going to be straightforward, but starting with the human being and working your way out is probably going to be a good way of sort of thinking about what your strategy is. So for me, that was an inclusion moment.
Yeah. So it's mindset and kind of cultural beliefs that could be and are as much of a barrier to adoption as the technical skills themselves.
Yeah. And, you know, one of what I thought about her approach to these things is, you know, which is quite common when people release chatbots onto the market, they get a load of abuse, you know, on websites and things like that, because people, they want to figure out how to break it. And that seems to be very common with tools like ChatGPT. But if you sort of go, how do I break it? You always end up with it broken. And what you learn is that it's broken. Mm-hmm. So, you know, potentially if you catch yourself sort of thinking, I've made a judgment about Copilot or any other AI tool, which feels permanent to you, I would say revisit it. Keep trying, keep having a go, and keep investigating and experimenting, because we know that is the secret sauce for super duper AI literacy.
And it also comes back to the one hit prompt, which is most likely going to return garbage, and also reverts back to communicating with the bot. Because if you're not 100% sure about something, the answer, the output that it's given you, ask it. Could you just talk me through your thinking? Could you just talk me through or tell me where your sources have come from? How about this? And it's interrogating it.
Yeah, it's like it is a black box because we don't really know how it works. But don't treat it like that. Just ask it. Like, have a dialogue. Treat it like, you know, as if you were talking to a colleague, and you get goodness real fast.
Yeah. Another thing that popped up this week, which I thought was really interesting, is the use of generative AI to support CV selection. And I guess this is perhaps more applicable to organisations of scale that receive hundreds of CVs, where it does take a lot of human time. And if there is a certain set of criteria that is absolutely paramount in order to, you know, move towards the next process, section of the process.
Like a killer question, you know, have I got a bachelor's degree, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And you would just discount the 50 people that didn't have it.
Exactly. And we, in some of the client conversations, it came up, somebody said, I see this as actually reducing bias, because if there are set it's the criteria, isn't it, that has to be true regardless of anything else. Well, a computer can make that decision as long as they've got the framework to work within, whereas a human might be also looking at those things and a couple of other things, go, oh no, so he sounds a bit funny, and he's got the criteria, but
he sounds a bit funny. He's got a funny name.
But humans can be inherently biased without realizing, because of various different experiences and beliefs and upbringing and what have you. And so that was, I thought it posed an interesting debate, because I know a lot of people are very against the idea of a computer picking out CVs. But is it not true to say it could be less biased? And if there is a really defined list of criteria to help move to the next stage, is that not a good idea?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. So there's a Popeye Chicken in Northampton in the UK where I live, and it's got like an AI thing where you pull up and you tell it what you want in the drive-thru. And so I said to the guy who gave me my food, I was like, is that more or less accurate than human beings? And he went, it's about the same. It just makes different mistakes. And I think you've got to treat AI the same way, right? So the AI tool you're using may have algorithmic bias. I'm listening out for the word banana, just in case Rich is ready. Yeah. Algorithmic bias?
Yeah.
I think us mere mortals can understand that. But so, yeah, it's favoring the algorithm that's been set, right?
Nice. Thank you very much. So the algorithm, cheers, Rich. It's a bit of reinforcement. I feel really good now. So the bias might be in there. Anyway, point is, treat it as if you were talking to another human being. Assume, you know, it's probably better at managing bias, but sometimes you've got to tell it to do that. So you've got to manage your own bias when you're using it and manage the biased outputs. It's a bias festival, and you're the guest of honour.
There you go.
I do have a question, though. Would it be biased against candidates with wooden noses?
Yes. That was one of the humorous comments from Podcast One. And it would definitely filter you out, because if you were working in a high-risk environment, for example, where there were live flames, we wouldn't want you walking around with a wooden nose.
Fire hazard.
Okay. So
that's a legitimate bias. Let's get into adventures in AI. And what we promised in episode one, last episode, was in line with our theme of falling in love with Copilot, because loads of organizations seem to be choosing it, and so we want to help people get literate with that stuff, with those things, with that tool. We said we'd have a go at using Microsoft Copilot agents.
Mm.
Yeah.
Now then, I've heard about Copilot Studio.
Yeah.
Which has got agents in it.
Yeah.
What on earth is it? Please explain to our lovely listeners who will probably be thinking that was just a noise.
What is an agent? So an agent is, so tools like ChatGPT and Copilot and Claude, they create content of one kind or another. They kind of like look at words and they use maths to come up with chains of words that look like really convincing paragraphs, even though they don't actually know what they're talking about. An agent is a thing that does things. It performs actions. So if you were to combine Microsoft Copilot with a Copilot agent, you would ultimately say to it things like, could you set up a meeting with me and Bob next week? And it would go, I'm looking at your email, I'm sending Bob an email, I'm putting that in the calendar, and it would actually perform an action in relation to your request. So I got really excited about this, and I thought, right. And the promise in the last podcast was, we'll waste the time so you don't have to. And that, like,
and
you know,
you
that
wasted the time.
Yeah. And that's exactly what happened. I spent an hour rummaging around in Copilot Studio trying to find a bot that was useful, an agent that was useful. I came up with absolutely nothing. And I think that's one of my big frustrations. I'm trying to fall in love with Copilot, or we are trying to fall in love with Copilot, but it's like you sort of walk into a room and it's just like Lego pieces everywhere, just tiny little Lego pieces, and you don't know which bits to pick up. There's no instructions. You just feel kind of lost and like it's kind of formless. And there are some agents in there that you kind of go, somebody's made that, but I don't know what it does or where my data goes. You know, there was just nothing of meaning in there for me as just like an everyday, hardworking, overshirt wearing, hard hat wearing civilian. There was just nothing, Lucy.
It seems like maybe sometimes they launch things a bit too early.
Yeah.
And that's a problem, because then will continue to play with it, because it will get better. And we'll share that as and when, but there will be people, just like we mentioned earlier, who try it, think it's garbage, and don't go back to it.
Yeah, exactly. So I was watching this TV advert the other day. Like, I accidentally sat there long enough to watch a TV advert, and it was this Vauxhall Corsa thing, and it was like, our new car's got this, it's got that, it's got the other, and it's got 500 intelligent LED lights. And I sort of sat there watching it going, What does that mean? Like, so what? Like, what?
A disco car?
Yeah, what does that mean? And that Microsoft seems to have got the same sort of mindset. It's just like, we'll create these amazing features and just leave them lying around and hope people pick them up and use them. I'm just like, no, like, make it easy for me. Explain to me how I can solve my everyday problems, and then I'll engage more. So, like, Bill, if you're listening, mate, you know, get on it. Bill Gates.
You said there were lots of different agents. Are they given a name, like 007 or James Bond, or is it like female agent? You know, it's all a bit confusing. So we need to continue our exploration, I think, and let people know as and when they need to be concerned about that.
Absolutely, because what you want, and we're here for that, for you. So we'll let you know when there is an agent that can do that stuff. We will tell you when it's available and where you can go and find it. And we're listening as well. So if you've cracked it, if you've cracked Microsoft Copilot agents and you want to let us know how to get going with it, then just give us a shout, because at the moment I'm rummaging around and just rolling my eyes after an hour.
And, you know, this isn't an agent, or maybe it could be, but just to kind of help level out the falling in love with Copilot, I have to say, so the other day I needed to produce a survey, and I use MS Forms, and I went to start to build the prompt of what I want in ChatGPT. And I thought, no, let's fall in love with Copilot.
That's right. And there's been a few amber flags, you know, like they split the bill on the first date, but let's see what the you know.
I love your analogies. So I was using Copilot to craft what I wanted. It helped me produce a prompt that I then dropped into MS Forms, and it built me a wonderful and a branded survey. Done.
In okay.
5 minutes.
So I'm like your dad now, and I'm like, yeah, so I've seen this guy pulling up in his noisy car. You know, and he looks like a ruffian. So how many iterations did you need before the form was ready? I bet it was loads.
I'm going to say two, and that's purely mostly because I missed a question element out. Oh, and actually the main iteration that I needed to do, it produced it in a standard way. I wanted the Leichhardt system and rating of 1 to 5. So I just went back and told it to amend the output using Leichhardt's format, and it worked beautifully.
Because that is a real pain in the butt. Like when you're working on Microsoft Forms and you're actually having to design and create your own Leichhardt scales, like it's really, really time consuming. And you just wish you could delegate it. So it looks like you're on a winner there.
So there's a little bit of love for Copilot.
I'm not quite ready for Copilot to take you to the prom, but I'm getting closer.
Thanks, Dad.
Bananas.
Go on, what's the...
What bit?
Well... I'm not somebody who uses Copilot, so I don't. Would you be able to explain in a nutshell, maybe using ChatGPT and Copilot together, what the difference is? Like, what would be a use case for ChatGPT, like your number one go-to, and then Copilot? I get the impression Copilot's more corporate.
Because it's ring-fenced within the 365 Microsoft framework, which is then integrated into organizations' infrastructure. So there is a more perceived element of security. So first and foremost, it is around data security.
Yeah, so it's like ChatGPT, it's like a web browser, right? So you can go onto ChatGPT or it's in your phone, and it's like a standalone tool that you can use for lots of different purposes. You can create, you can do content creation, you can do write communications, you can do data analysis, you can learn things, you can use it as a thinking partner. It's very, very flexible, but it's a bit like a lump of clay. You have to sort of shape it. With Microsoft Copilot, it's like somebody's taken a simplified version of ChatGPT and sort of plugged it into things. So in Word, you can go, hey, Word, can you write me a paragraph about this? And it'll go, yeah. Or in PowerPoint, you can say, could you write me a presentation about this? But it always comes up as sort of like a sort of sixth form standard or like a early college kid standard. It's not really high quality. But you can go into Copilot and use it, you know, as a thought partner and things like that. It's just a bit more limited. It's like a muzzled version of ChatGPT, but it's getting stronger and stronger all the time. Like that Microsoft Forms example, you know, is helping us to fall in love with it, but it's, you know, it's going to help people and organizations to do more cool stuff. So we see Microsoft Copilot. That's why we're trying to fall in love with it. It's corporate and it's muzzled and it's not quite as cool, but it's getting better all the time.
I think it's worth just highlighting the different elements here in Copilot, because you've got the Copilot and the AI that's been plugged up the backside of Word or of Excel. So when you're in that particular application, you'll see the little icon and you can put something in there. Or there is the web-based platform for Copilot, yeah, where you can communicate with, where you can craft, where you can research. And it's that particular element of Copilot that we're referring to when we compare it to how you can communicate and craft outputs with ChatGPT.
And the agents, they just need to get better, don't they?
They do need to get better.
What are we going to do about these agents?
We're going to keep playing with them, Rich, until we get to the point where they're actually providing value, because at the moment we're not there. But like I said, if you're listening to this and you're getting agents to do useful things for you, please let us know. You know, we are here to sort of lead the way, but also we are open to your voice as well.
Yeah, and because I think that when people hear more about agents, 007s, there's going to be more fear, because yeah, that is leading into the realms of doing the job that I might be doing. So can we just keep an eye on that, and we'll come back on it.
So we fully expect to have a vibrant roster of guests on our podcast. We've got a a human-oriented chief data officer of a global organization with 3,000 people. Not mentioning the name of the organization because I'm not sure if he's asked his boss or not. So we'll find out when he turns up on the next podcast. But Ian is doing artificial intelligence applications on a very big scale. So he's building like machine learning things and artificial intelligence things. So it'd be really good to get his take on generative AI and tools like Copilot and whatnot, and just sort of see from a chief data officer perspective how he sees Copilot able to sort of give him management information, how he can sort of look into an organization and find interesting things using Copilot. I think it's going to be a fascinating conversation.
Yeah, and I'd be interested to learn whether he's actually knows much about it. And I know that sounds a bit silly, but because I'm assuming he's going to have been really busy building big stuff and robots.
Big things.
And so we've got to brief him, no word stacking. So with him being busy doing all of that, has he considered the generative AI and Copilot and what the organization's going to have? Has he thought about the people and the impact to the organization? Not to call him out if he hasn't as such, but those are some of the things that come to my mind.
Yeah, because that question starts off with where does it sit? You know, so we'll have that debate.
Dear Lucy, help me fix my techie heart.
Lucy, you're in such demand, I have to go to my drawer and just like pick a random letter from all the hundreds of letters that we're getting. And you know, if you want to add your letter to that hundreds of letters, please do. And here is the letter now. Let's have a look. Dear Lucy, I'm in a bit of a conundrum and could use your advice. My boss has made it clear that we can't use tools like Copilot or ChatGPT. I've been using my own computer at home as I find it helps me so much. And it frustrates the heck out of me. It says hell here, but I can't say that. That he is so stuck in his ways. Do I keep using it under the desk as such? Stop using it as per his request? Or confront him? And if the latter, how? Love the show. That's from Laura. Do you reckon that's her real name?
Could be. Lots of Lauras in the world. So it's not identifying anybody. Okay, so let's break this down. Somebody doesn't like or hasn't got on board with generative AI.
Mm.
And that makes me think they don't understand it and would rather avoid it than highlight they don't understand it. Or maybe they've tried it and it didn't perform, so now they've binned it off. So there's all a whole heap of things that are going on over there. It's a real shame to hear the lack of forward thinking for somebody to go as far as saying you can't use anything.
Yeah.
As we said last week, it's really important to train and then trust. Why would you not use tools if they're going to make things easier? I mean, hello, washing machines. Hello, calculators.
Yeah.
So I feel sorry for Laura very much in that.
Me too.
Instance. And I'm going to also say you're not alone. There is a whole community out there that are in exactly the same position. I hope that makes you feel just a little bit better.
That is good agony aunting, like the not alone bit. Like that was on the money, I think.
Yeah. And also to say, you know, good on you for being proactive and trying and exploring, but now you're in a conundrum. Okay, so I think communication is everything, and as difficult as it may be, I think there needs to be a conversation.
There does need to be a conversation.
And it might need to be a coaching conversation to, mm-hmm. to have the opportunity to show how Laura is using the tools, whether it's ChatGPT or whether it's Copilot, because it might be that she's crafting emails or letters, which is just about taking things out of the tools as opposed to anything about putting anything in. So there's no security kind of concerns or elements there. So, it's a conversation and it's the opportunity to show how she's using it, why she's using it, and the impact of using it in terms of perhaps time saved and what that then allows her to do. That has to happen, because without that conversation, I mean, it's changing somebody's kind of mindset. And if they're a bit of an arse, but stuck in their ways, that's another challenge.
So better to just like actually front it out and have that coaching conversation rather than do like a sort of set a trap, which is to go, did you like that piece of work? And the manager goes, yeah, it was really good. And you go, ha, it was ChatGPT, because that could be fraught with danger.
Yes, I think, could we have a conversation about the use of generative AI? I would love to show you how I'd like to use it and what it could bring in terms of support to me and potentially the team before you make that final kind of cutoff decision. I would love to show you.
That's it. And as Steve gets ushered into a room, or Steve or Bob or whatever his name is, then he goes, who are those two people? And Laura goes, that's Andrew and Lucy. They're here to help. And we go, we're going to walk you through it. It's going to be okay. I hold his hand.
Absolute no from that conversation. My next advice to Laura would be look elsewhere.
Yeah, use the web function on ChatGPT to do a web scrape of jobs that you might like, which are better paid and have more enlightened managers.
Yeah, absolutely. Because if that organisation is banning absolutely everything, where do you think the next interns of graduates are gonna go? A company that is embracing and that is adopting and that is supporting upskilling for innovative ways to work, or a company that is doing it this way because we always have?
Absolutely.
Hope that helps, Laura.
We're with you, Laura. You're not alone.
We're with you at this difficult time.
Do you see that a lot with people with like C levels who are maybe a little bit out of touch and they're not willing to let AI lighten the load in the very obvious places?
The classic is like, I'm retiring in 3 years. I'm going to dodge this. Right. So I'll just put my fingers in my ears and go, la, 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 la. But yeah, there are people who believe it's cheating and they're robbing their organization of performance uplift. Let's do quick fire questions, a little bit of fizz and froth towards the end of the end of the podcast to lighten the tone, because that was a heavy duty letter, I think, where we just fire a few surprise questions at each other to throw each other off our stable base and create a bit of weirdness and awkwardness. So we've got three questions each, one at a time. You go first.
All right. First question to you, Andrew. Would you rather a week without the internet or a week without speaking?
I think a week without speaking, I would love it. Could I chant it to myself as I'm pottering around? Okay, yeah, a week without speaking, I would love that. Absolutely love it. Just to be lost in my own mind. That'd be amazing. Thank you. Right, question for you. If Microsoft Copilot went to therapy, what problem would it share with the therapist?
Imposter syndrome. I think it would feel that it doesn't quite perform as everybody else believes it, hopes it, and expects of it, and struggling with confidence to deliver full capacity.
Yeah, it's like a nepo, like a nepotism baby who's been ushered into a job just because of legacy, but actually is sometimes not after the job. Okay, all right, what you got for me?
If you had to always wear this item of clothes for the rest of your life, would you rather it be a tuxedo or your pajamas?
Pajamas. Comfort wins first time. There is no question. and I would just front that out. Like, yeah, that would be very, as you know, I'm quite a scruffy person. So for me, that's a really simple one. Question for you. Is it true that your go-to karaoke song is Baby Shark? Because that's what I've heard.
Absolutely not. My go-to karaoke song is Anastasia. I'm out of love.
Nice. Can you actually like do that at high quality?
At the 3 a.m. to 5 a.m. slot, yes.
Okay, with a bit of a sort of a bit of a rasp. Excellent. All right, next question.
Okay, and if you could choose between these two, would you prefer to always sneeze as you enter a room or to hiccup as you leave?
Hiccup as I leave, because there's so much less explaining, I think. Like, sneeze as you walk into a room, you'd have to, like, always be explaining it. But hiccup as you leave, like, nobody cares, you're gone. Last question then, and it's actually quite similar to yours. If you try to avoid, like, think about your daily life, like, so, like, the rest of the day after you finish this podcast, how long do you think you could go in real life without using AI in some way?
So for the rest of the day, well, I'd be okay until this evening.
Right, okay.
Because I need some help with some projects I've got this evening. So, yeah, I'm, I've I'm okay for, let's say, 2 or 3 hours.
2 or 3 hours, right? Not, okay. So the thing is, it's just there, or it's there everywhere, isn't it? Like, even Netflix is using AI to change little thumbnails on your TV screen when you're trying to choose things.
True. That's, I thought you meant me using it, but no, you know, I'll be at the hairdressers later, and that's got no AI.
Okay, so no use for AI there. That is a profession which is completely safe from AI. Yeah. Alrighty, so that's our episode. Throwing forward to the next episode, we've talked about our special guest Ian, the Chief Data Officer. He's going to come and share his perspective. We'll share more adventures from in the field and more AI adventures, especially trying to fall in love with Copilot. I'm going to have a rummage around on those forms. Anything else to expect in the next episode?
We're going to bring some examples and use cases from the HR world.
Yes.
I think that would be really useful, and some practical use cases.
That's it. And so we're going to have a lot of rich conversation, because we're spending the day with an HR function of a housing association on Tuesday. So by the time we record the next podcast, we will have a lot of rich conversations about those use cases, and also people's like human reaction to this topic as well.
Yeah, I agree. I'll look forward to that, and coming up with loads of different ideas of what else we could do on the next podcast, because after we recorded it last week, I woke up at 6 a.m. with, I know that doesn't sound early, but it's mega early.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, and that's different. How? Like, what?
That's like illegal for me. But with so much, I was like, I need to get this down, all these ideas. So I hope that if you're listening, if you're a CPO, you work in a HR team, if you are part of an IT team, we have encouraged in some way you to have the conversations, you to experiment, you to think about how you can use generative AI to do some amazing things. I hope that we've inspired and those ideas were good ones.
So at the end of Strictly Come Dancing, they've always got a catchphrase, which is, if you're not in the UK, that's a British TV show about dancing, which is franchised everywhere, so you probably know it. They go, keep dancing. Yes. We need to think of a catchphrase. Anyone got anything now?
Keep tinkering. No.
Keep tinkering. Yeah, that's it. Reg, got anything?
Keep prompting.
Like that.
Keep prompting.
Keep prompting. That's something I'm often not. We'll work it out.
Adios, until next time.
Bye for now. Welcome to the AI.